Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. The legislature's Joint Finance Committee will be traveling across the state in just a few weeks, hearing directly from Wisconsinites about their priorities for the biennial budget. The 16-member committee is typically been voting along party lines in recent years, and even with a record surplus, there are few areas of agreement thus far. Today, we are sitting down with two ranking Democratic members of the Joint Finance Committee, Senator LaTanya Johnson and Representative Evan Goyke. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay. You are the seasoned members on the Democratic side of the Joint Finance Committee. What's different this budget season, would you say, other than that record surplus?
I think that there tends to be a little agreement around mental health, around child care issues. So going into the budget, that makes it a little better. But other than that, I would just say, you know, there are a lot of new members this time on Joint Finance, which isn't that far away from us being new members on Joint Finance. So I guess those things are similar.
How are you preparing?
Well, we've had two budgets under divided government, and so some of the same things I expect will play out, some of the same dynamics. But I do feel like we know each other a little bit more now. We've had two budgets under Governor Evers with the Republican legislature, many of the same leaders in the legislative leadership positions. There are changes. I agree with LaTanya wholeheartedly. There's a lot of new members of the legislature overall. But, you know, this dynamic of the executive branch controlled by Democrats and the legislative branch controlled by Republicans is playing out pretty similar as it has the last two budgets.
So the Republican co-chairs recently announced the public hearings going around the state. We're showing the dates up on the screen. There will be four hearings. Also, the Democratic members, you're hosting your own separate roundtable discussions. Why are you doing that?
Well, the committee co-chairs, Republicans, have only announced four dates, and they've missed major population centers and important voices from this public debate. So right away, we were in Milwaukee to hear from some of our neighbors and colleagues in Milwaukee. We are planning right now the Fox Valley. If you look at where the Republicans are taking Joint Finance, there's nothing near Oshkosh, Appleton, Green Bay, Sheboygan, Manitowoc. So we'll be in the Northeast as well and the western part of the state, hopefully. So we want to supplement what the co-chairs have missed by only having four hearings and choosing the locations they did.
You mentioned you had your first roundtable discussion in Milwaukee. That was a week ago today, Monday. What did you hear there that you don't think you'll hear in those other four Joint Finance Committee hearings?
I think for me to hear the personal stories around why they're advocating for the things that were in the budget. One refreshing thing that I heard was the thank yous, because what they asked for was in the budget, so they felt like the governor heard them. That was extremely important. But to get the firsthand knowledge of why that particular issue was important for them, like the child care issues, hearing from the child care providers that they are actually losing staff because they can't afford to pay the competitive wages, which hurts their quality of care, but also being forced to close particular rooms because they don't have enough teachers, they don't have enough staff, when we know that there is an urgent need for child care all around the state, and then particularly here in Madison. To hear that there are quality child care centers with their classrooms closed because they don't have staff, and we know those kids, there are a slew of kids that need quality care, I think that was extremely concerning.
Were there issues that came up in Milwaukee that you think you won't maybe hear as much about in the rest of the state?
I think the voices of our community in Milwaukee are going to be echoed around the state. Issues like funding, public schools, the university system, local government leaders, child care providers, health care providers, those were voices at the table in Milwaukee. I expect those to be some of the dominant themes of this coming budget.
We'll talk a little bit more about child care in a second, but I want to know what your personal top three priorities, if you could summarize.
I think for me, it is local government funding and finding an agreement. This is an issue that's been long, long overdue that LaTanya and I have worked on for years. I think there's how will we handle the unwinding of COVID relief, whether that's child care aid, health care supplements? We received a lot of federal funds during COVID that will expire under this budget. So this is a broad kind of what is my top goals, but how will we help people and organizations and entities that have relied on that funding over the last couple of years? And then the third thing is, what are we doing to retain our people? We've had the slowest growth decade in the history of the state of Wisconsin, and our workforce is really challenged. We look 20 years into the future with some really daunting demographic trends in the state. So what investments do we make today, with especially this one-time surplus, that will set the stage for growth for the next 20 years?
Do you have a top three priorities for the budget?
Local government funding is extremely important. I know the situations are dire for Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, and we've also heard how dire it is for other parts of the state as well. So making sure that we can keep local government whole is extremely important. Mental health. Mental health is a huge factor all across the state. Making sure that those individuals who need the resources and the help are able to get it. And also childcare. Child care is huge. Making sure that our kiddos have quality care is extremely important.
Oh, so speaking of child care, the governor proposes more than $340 million to provide a permanent investment in the Child Care Counts COVID-19 Stabilization Payment Program that has supported over 3,300 providers. He also adds $22 million to the Partner Up Program, which supports employer child care provider partnerships, and then he expands the Child and Dependent Care Credit. We've had the Republican co-chairs on this program. Child care did not make their top three priorities. Are you concerned that it needs to be a higher priority overall?
I am concerned if we don't take any action. Parents across the state that rely on child care need to understand that rates will go up substantially, that these COVID relief dollars helped to tamp down costs, and you know, inflation has hit every sector of our economy, including the wages that child care providers have to pay their teachers and their staff. So we've heard estimates of 20, 30, 40% cost increases if this child care counts funding isn't continued. What that means, if child care costs go up 20 to 40%, that means parents are going to have to make the difficult choice of whether they can afford to work. We have a workforce shortage already, and if we take these workers out of the workforce, it's only going to get worse. So this is a critical investment for our workforce, and of course for the families of the next generation of Wisconsinites.
And not to mention, they anticipate if these funds are not made available, that 25% of the child care centers will close. Now, we know that around the state, 54% of families live in what's known as a child care desert. They don't have quality care for the number of kids in the age groups in that area. That's extremely concerning, because in that capital, I hear my Republican colleagues talk about all the time getting people back to work. This is essential for people to get back to work. And why they can't seem to grasp that, I don't understand. Because the child care counts funding will help 113,000 children. That's not a small number, and it's definitely something worth the investment.
Do you think this issue is queuing up to be a debate in the budget, or are you already trying to convince your Republican colleagues to get on board with some sort of solution?
I think they have to get on board with some form of solution. We are geared up to make it a priority. I think as you follow the debate of the budget and listen and cover the public hearings, my guess is this will be a major and repeated issue from residents across the state. Some in the past budgets, so occasionally you have one or two issues that percolate up from the grassroots that you might not expect to be so important that it kind of catches fire. I expect childcare, as we travel the state, to be one of those top issues in this budget, really defining what people are coming out in front of our committee talking about.
We mentioned what the governor included in his budget around child care. Your Republican colleagues have called the governor's entire budget an unrealistic wish list. They say it increases spending by more than 17%, far beyond projected growth. Are they wrong?
Yes. Yes, I think so. I'll let you answer it, Latonya.
So this is a point of contention for me. The fact that we have a $7.1 billion surplus and we are coming off of a pandemic shows just how my Republican colleagues were capable of leading. Because if it wasn't for ARPA funds and the governor's ability to direct those funds where they were most needed, we would have an even bigger surplus, but our state would be decimated. The fact that they tried to, first of all, they sent a letter asking the federal government not to send us bailout funds, and then they wanted to dictate how the governor spent those funds. They wanted to use ARPA dollars to plug in regular things that should have been paid from the budget in the first place. So the fact that we were able to survive because of the governor's attitude toward making sure that the people of Wisconsin were okay. Now we're being told that the budget that he's presenting is unrealistic when this budget came from the people. Words cannot explain how much that irritates me, because for too long we have under-resourced, under-financed too many programs that we had that we could have otherwise funded. And that's just hurt the state, not made it any better.
Republicans say we're in uncertain times, likely headed toward a recession, and that surplus is mainly one-time funds. They say you can't build a budget on one-time funds. How do you look at that surplus, mostly one-time funds? How should it be responsibly spent?
Well, I think the governor did exactly that in his proposal. There's $1 billion reserved for a potential future economic downturn that is then invested, which we expect would return additional $20 million in interest. He uses almost $2 billion to do cash financing of our capital budget, which would save us about $800 million over the course of 20 or 30 years of the borrowing for those building projects. Those are responsible ways of holding back or spending one-time money on one-time projects that have, you know, long-term impacts that help budgets into the future. But to your point, if we want to have world-class public institutions, schools, communities, we have to pay for them. Inflation has hit every sector. We cannot bury our head in the sand and pretend like things like we can keep world-class institutions without paying for it. It's just not the way the world works. And I want to repeat this, it's an important theme. We had the slowest growth decade, less than half the national average in growth. And if you take out Dane County's growth, we're really towards the bottom nationally. And it's a scary proposition if you start to look out into the future. So we have to stop that trend of lack of growth. And to do that, we have to attract and retain families and people, and you do that by investing in the things that define our lives, like our schools and our universities and having childcare. I mean, these are things that people value in their everyday lives.
You both represent the city of Milwaukee. What's at stake for the city in this biennial budget?
Oh my God. So our Milwaukee is pretty much close to bankrupt. If it wasn't for the ARPA funds being able to push that off to 2025, we would be in real trouble. Milwaukee County is not far behind, 2027. So this budget, especially the 20% increase in shared revenue, is everything for Milwaukee and the county. Quality of life is at risk. Making sure that we're able to retain those families that, you know, call Milwaukee home and that want to continue to call Milwaukee home. My daughter was organizing a high school reunion, and she was like, Mom, only 10 of my high school classmates still live in Milwaukee. And that's a huge issue because our young people are fleeing, and they're fleeing for other cities where they feel that there are better opportunities. So there's a lot at stake.
Are you talking to your Republican colleagues about this issue, about the critical nature of what's at stake? Do they get it?
I think so. I would say on this issue of local government funding, I am optimistic that a solution will move forward and will pass. I think I'm worried, I'm anxious, but I'm optimistic. I do think they get it. In the weeks ahead, our colleague on Joint Finance, Representative Kurtz, and I are doing a legislative exchange. I'll spend a day in his district. He'll spend a day in mine. And during those days, we intend to include conversations with local leaders to really understand the finances. And I want to give credit to County Executive David Crowley and Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson. They are here all the time. I see them in the Capitol much more than I have ever in my 10 years in office. They are working every single day to make sure that the Republicans in the legislature understand the fiscal challenges, where they came from, and what they're doing to remedy them, and the solutions that could move us forward.
Representative Goyke, you said in an earlier interview when the budget came out that shared revenue is a likely area of compromise, but that the, kind of the devil is in the details in terms of how it will be divided out. What do you think is a fair way, formula for shared revenue?
Well, I think that in this context, Milwaukee as a city and Milwaukee as a county need a solution that's different because we're so much
the state?
Correct. We're so much larger, and so we've advocated for a local option sales tax. Most cities or regions the size of Milwaukee in the United States of America have some form of elevated sales tax that recognizes and generates funds from all of the activity and the culture. I was downtown with my son at the Children's Museum, and it was a little hub of activity in all of the families. And so it's recognizing and capturing the economics of being that, you know, regional hub. We have a formula where we, you know, heavily dependent on property taxation. And so communities that don't have property value that's growing, and then this is primarily small rural communities and urban legacy cities, they just can't keep up with the cost, the increased cost of doing business. And so there has to be some supplement to that, especially divided to making sure that people have an ambulance. If they need to call 911, that someone can show up, professional fire departments, police departments, and then those local intimate services like snow plowing and picking up your garbage. So the good thing about this issue is that it affects every single person in the state of Wisconsin. The bad thing about this issue is it affects every single person in the state of Wisconsin.
It's going to take a lot of money to fix it.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on the governor's proposal for $290 million to renovate American Family Field for the Brewers?
Well, so it's in the governor's budget, and I believe that he was approached and the conversation was had and the money was relevant and needed.
Is it needed more somewhere else?
What I do know is that we cannot afford to lose the Brewers. We cannot afford to lose that revenue base. That revenue base is helping the entire state, not just Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee. Those salaries, you know, the tourism dollars from people going to those Brewer games, we have to make sure that we keep the Brewers here. And so whatever is necessary to do that and to keep those revenue dollars in this state, I think we absolutely have to do.
Is that $290 million investment a good use of one-time funds, or should it be spent elsewhere?
It's hard to imagine Milwaukee or Wisconsin without the Brewers. The conversation we were just having about local government funding and how Milwaukee is the cultural and economic hub of the state and of southeast Wisconsin, it's hard to imagine that being as true without the Brewers. We have a surplus. If we're going to do it, now's the time. The governor is basically taking that $290 and setting it aside for the next 20 years so that we don't have to continue to have this conversation. I support getting a deal done. I support keeping and locking the Brewers in long term. The area around the stadium, we don't represent the stadium, but real close, real close. Yeah. And it's a vibrant part of the city of Milwaukee. I think it's poised for a lot of future growth. That can only happen if we know that the Brewers are going to be there long term.
Where do you think the committee can find agreement on education funding? Do you think there'll be some expansion of school choice in this budget in exchange for increases in K-12 public education?
I think some of the areas where we can find agreement is definitely in literacy. We know literacy is very much needed in this state, and we are going to have to put dollars behind it. I'm hoping that we can find agreement for mental health in our schools, especially expanding the list of providers that are eligible to provide mental health services in our schools. Special needs. Every, you know, biennium, we know that that number needs to be increased, but we never quite get to the 60% mark. So I'm hoping that this time we can actually get there, especially for our high-cost special needs students, because we know that if the money isn't available there, they're pulling it from other funds within the school, and that makes the overall educational level go down for all the students. We need to be funding it at the rate in which it's needed, because it's important.
UW System President is seeking a 5% tuition increase. Are you concerned about the impact of tuition increase? Does there need to be a statutory limit on tuition increase?
Well, my job as a legislator is to ensure that the state does its part, and that that part has not been done over the last decade, in my opinion. The amount of state aid to universities has been stagnant or gone down, and the governor is proposing a 5% increase. If you know, we have not traditionally funded the freeze, so we've said schools can't raise tuition, but we have not provided the resources necessary to ensure that they remain the world-class institutions that they are. So I certainly support the governor's plan to put more general-purpose revenue dollars back into the university system to ease the pressure. But again, we can't have these world-class institutions for free. We are being outspent by many of our neighbors, and we've got to keep up if we want to retain the professors and researchers and, frankly, attract the students. And for our own homegrown Wisconsinites that get an education and stay here, we need to make these investments. So I don't want to tie the hands of the regents through a state statute. You know, they're appointed and trusted for a reason. That system has been in place as long as I can remember. What hasn't been done is the state meeting its mark in supporting the UW system.
And I want to add that I think that both the UW systems and the governor did a tremendous thing in the budget for allowing Wisconsin residents with families who make less than $62,000, for allowing them the opportunity to go to school under the tuition promise, basically free, you know, which is going to be a huge game changer for our low-income kids, especially our minority kids. And that would help to increase the pipeline that we're talking about that's so much needed in the state. And it's their commitment, I feel, to the students, especially those that are most vulnerable and have the least, to give them an opportunity to go to school for free. Now, we know, because the UW chancellor has told us, that they can foot the bill for the first year, but the state is going to have to kick in the money for the remaining years. And I think it's important that we heed that and we take an opportunity and take advantage of that.
Do you expect a similar number of 12 to 4 party line votes this year in the committee as compared to years past? Or do we think it'll get a lot of 16 zeros?
No. I think that there will be a lot of 12 to 4s. The co-chairs announced about a month ago that they will be operating under this the same procedures as they did last year. What that means is that the two parties will offer what we now refer to as omnibus motion, so that all of the Department of Children and Families will be included in one document, one motion, one vote. There was a time when the committee went item by item, and it was slow, and there were a lot of late nights. LaTanya and I weren't on the committee. But
think that was a better process?
It offered more attention to the details of each of those items and more opportunities for bipartisanship. When the two parties have two take-it-or-leave-it solutions, that's exactly what happens. And so it prevents, we're just talking at each other. And what happens as a minority party on the committee, I don't know anything that's in the Republicans' plan until it literally falls at my desk in that moment. So it's very hard to vote yes for a plan I've never seen before 30 seconds after it gets handed to me. And in part, this inability or unwillingness to take the time to go item by item prevents a lot of bipartisanship.
You agree, 12 to 4s?
I do. I think Democrats pray for 16 to 0 votes. We pray really, really hard. But unfortunately, that doesn't always happen. And I think it's not because we don't try. We do. I think it's just because in a lot of cases, we aren't listened to.
I have to ask you both about a few non-budget items. There's a constitutional amendment on the ballot this April that will allow judges to, you're very familiar, consider a person's criminal history in addition to other factors when determining how to impose cash bail. You both oppose that amendment. What's your prediction on whether or not it passes?
I think ultimately it does pass. I think voters, when they go in to read it, will are frustrated. And what I have been specifically advocating for is an alternative system that does not base the decisions on money and allows judges to hold people that are a public safety risk without bail at all. The federal government uses that system. It's called pretrial detention. There are people being detained in Wisconsin in federal jails right now, and it basically prevents somebody with a lot of means from buying their way out of jail.
Does that bipartisan support?
It has in other places, just not in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, your thoughts on that constitutional amendment?
I used to be a former bail bondsman in another state in a much different life. So I made my living on bails. And I can totally say without the blink of an eye, those individuals with the finances and the resources, no matter how much the bail is, they're going to get out. That it is those people with lesser means that are trapped in the system. And so making that system fair is extremely, extremely important. And getting a system to do that is extremely important. Unfortunately, I hope people see the amendment for exactly what it is, as a way to turn out voters and their base. And hopefully it fails.
You both have a successful track record on pieces of legislation that you've moved working across the aisle. I know you're working on some legislation related to reckless driving. You're working on expungement reform. What is your secret to kind of working across the aisle on your pieces of legislation?
My secret is finding people who may be like-minded, who share the same interest as I do. When I go to those committee hearings, I listen. I listen for anything that might sound like me or something that I might agree with. And then I go to those individuals afterwards and talk to them about legislation. So, you know, I guess the key is always trying to see those similarities rather than seeing how you're so different, because we're all going to disagree on some things, but there are a lot of things that we can find agreement on.
Does your work on bipartisan legislation help you in the budget process?
Sometimes, I guess. I don't know. It depends on the issue a little bit. It has building trusted relationships across the aisle helps in any legislative context, whether it's the budget or a standalone bill, trying to amend a bill I disagree with, trying to kill a bill I really disagree with. So anyone in any work environment, the better you get to know your colleague, oftentimes it results in just a better working environment and a better working relationship. It's amazing how little time we actually spend together. You know, it's not a traditional job where we're always in the same office building. We were joking before we started recording. There's no cafeteria or gym or coffee shop that we all kind of see each other on a daily basis. You have to be relentless and patient at the same time. You have to really pursue those opportunities to work across the aisle, but you also have to let those relationships develop over time. It's taken 10 years to become close with the number of members on the other side of the aisle. That did not happen in my first or second legislative session, and it didn't happen on accident. So you have to really try, and you also have to be patient and kind of let those things happen organically.
What's your biggest concern for this budget?
My biggest concern for this budget is for the people who are the most vulnerable, the least of these. Our working families and our working poor families being left out and not getting the resources that they need, and not getting the quality of resources that they need. I see that in every budget that's passed, whether it's infant mortality or our public school systems, especially Milwaukee public school systems. You see people left behind. And the budget isn't supposed to be that. It's supposed to be for everyone. But in a lot of the budgets that I've been a part of, it's hard to see where that comes into play.
Your biggest concern?
Well, I think that as electeds, we're mostly shaped by the world we see around us. And LaTanya and I represent the same neighborhoods in Milwaukee where poverty rates are very high, have been very high for generations. And so it's challenging to come to Madison with a large surplus and not have a fear that this opportunity in front of us will be missed to make some of the investments we've spoken about that we're passionate about that would really positively change people's lives. I guess once I put my legislative hat on and I enter the state capitol, my biggest fear is that the two parties resort to their camps and that we're as divided as we possibly can and we don't find a consensus. This is an opportunity to do really good work for the people of Wisconsin. I mentioned it before and you're going to hear me mention it a lot. We need to alter our trajectory. We are not growing fast. The market is telling us that people are not coming here in the numbers that we need to sustain our workforce. And so we've got to do something different. So we've tried the kind of partisan divide over the last 4 years. The governor is elected for four more years. The Republicans are the majority this time. Great. Let's put that behind us. We have this little election in April. That'll happen. Put it behind us and actually get something meaningful done.
All right. That will be the last word. Thank you both for joining us, and good luck on the hearing trail.
Thank you.
Thank you. See you out there.
And thank you very much to the newsmakers, viewers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.